information, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Well, good evening. Nice to see you all. I do apologise for the state of my arm, by the way. That's what Snow is coming off a bicycle. And fun and games last week, so I have broken it and it's now held together with what looks suspiciously like a piece of Meccano on the x-ray. Four screws, yes.
So would you define it as a forearm smash then?
Luckily, well no, it was a two-arm smash, although this one looks reasonably healthy. It's going to take a while to come back to normal, yes. Yeah, be thankful that you can only see that, because the little bit you can see there gives an idea of the state of my body up this time. Anyway, there we are. I lived, so that conspiracy didn't get me, you see. However, having said that I lived, I will start with some sad news, because somebody hasn't lived, I'm sorry to say. Some of you may remember Paul Wright. And if you don't, when we used to be in the L shape, he nearly always sat about there, chap with glasses, leather jacket. He was, shall we say, a very regular attender of this meeting, but he did die, sadly, a few weeks ago. Only 48, I believe, of cancer. And that's the second person in that part of the room that's been got, because, of course, we lost Chris Hopper just a few months ago. So maybe it's good that that corner's been shut off now, right? That dark energy is gone. Yes, Dick, any update?
I did say to Helen at the time that when I looked at the order of service for Paul's service, I looked at the date of the birth, and he had the same date of birth as Chris did, and they died about a month apart.
How amazing!
And he was going up to Guildford, North Surrey for chemo, and Chris was mentoring him because he was a therapist as well. And his wife did actually mentioned that
Well, isn't that strange? Well, that's even stranger. Make of that what you will. Anyway, our traditional thing here is, and nobody here would really want a load of silence, I think we should give Paul a round of applause. Because he was a good old boy, and a very good astrologer as well, so a loss, but never mind. Okay, well, in the latest of our roundup of apocalypse news, how are we doing so far? The world's getting close by the look of it, isn't it? Anybody heard about Comet Elenin?
Yeah.
What's the score? What do you all think? Well, if you don't know, for those that don't know what we're talking about, there's a lot of fuss on the internet about Comet Elenin, which astronomers say is a minor comet, doesn't really mean much. Conspiracy theorists are saying, no, it's going to hit us. Now, quite how we get from one to the other, I'm really not sure. If it's not Comet Elenin, it's going to be this weird brown dwarf star, which apparently is also heading in, or Nibiru, or Nibiru, as it said on the internet the other day, which, of course, is the Sumerian planet which Zachariah Sitchin believed was on its way in. But there's a lot of sort of doom-mongering about, things coming in and causing havoc. But the only thing is that you would think, given how many amateur astronomers there are, somebody surely would have found absolute irrefutable evidence, unless it's coming in so fast that we're just not seeing it yet. But anyway, be ready, all right? And funnily enough, and now this is more serious, in a way, and I'll play this to you another time when we've got more time. Does anybody ever look at the NASA website?
Yeah.
I did once.
Once. It was that good. Well, if you looked at it a couple of weeks ago, there was a very curious thing on there. Now, NASA have been warning now for some time about worries about big solar flares. This is real. That's not conspiracy. It's real. They're very worried. And when NASA starts making very public statements, you know you need to find out more, because there's obviously a lot more they're not saying. They've been saying for several years now, many of you will already know, that the sun has been out of kilter, breaking records for activity and all the rest of it. Now it's gone to the slowest, the quietest it's been in years. In a very similar cycle to the quiet cycle, cycle 10, as it was affectionately known, that gave us what's called the Carrington event of 1859. As you will remember it well, doubtless. Now, that was such a big solar flare that had it happened today, it would have knocked out most of our infrastructure, electricity, databases.
Woohoo!
All it did... I'm coming in your bunker. Right. But of course, back in its day, all it did was take out some telegraphs. Now it's a different situation. NASA is getting very loud about you really do need to take this seriously. Big solar flares. And some, of course, think this is what the whole 2012 business is about. That maybe it's recording some cosmological cycle that does something funny to the sun. Anyway, if you're thinking, yeah, well, go and have a look at the NASA website. And 2 weeks ago, the head of NASA, I've already forgotten his name, but he put up this interesting warning. Now, FEMA is the Federal, I mean, this gets right, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And they run lots of sort of exercises in America based on, you know, what would you all do if there was a big crisis? And FEMA have been running their annual exercises, and the head of NASA is not happy with the response from NASA families. And what he's basically saying, in very kind of grave tones, is you need to be more ready for an emergency. And it's quite scary, because it's not a joke, this is real. He's saying, I just want you to just think about what would happen in an emergency. Do you know where your loved ones are? Do you know what to do? What are you going to do about your pets? And it goes on. And by the end of it, you think, shit. Because they're obviously expecting something. And I'm not being funny, this is really true. There's something in the offing. Now, whether it's the flares or Comet Elenin or God knows what, don't know. There's something in the air. And when NASA starts to say, run for the hills, you start to listen. So just, you heard it here, all right? Come try to me later on, if it all kicks off and you haven't got your water and food stored up in your garage. Because the thing is, nobody knows, it could just cause a couple of days of havoc and that's it. It could, in the worst case scenario, they are saying, this is NASA saying this, not conspiracy world, it could take the infrastructure out for months, even years. No power, no food chain, no refrigeration. Think about, you know, what that's going to entail. So I think if you are serious about weathering these times, you might really seriously want to have, you know, just something set aside. Because do you want to be looting Tesco's with everybody else when you realise there's no food? Do you remember the snow last year? You'll know this, Forest Row people. Right, Forest Row, the snow. And I've got photographs somewhere to prove this. By the end of the first day of the snow, every shelf in the shops was empty. People were going, oh my god. And there was nothing to buy, was there? And the local Floor Hatch or one of the farms had to bring a cart or a Land Rover with food and milk on the back. And this was after like 2 days of snow. Now imagine a week of no power and no food, and then 2 weeks. Think, right? And because havoc will break out. So I'm not saying this to scare you, but I just would say, look at what's going on. There's something in the air. And they may not know when. The solar flare peak of the current cycle, for instance, is expected to be now May 2013, which is not as kind of fun as the 2012 cycle peak they were talking about a few years ago, but because this cycle 24, was so slow to start, they're saying the peak's going to be May 2013. But that doesn't mean you couldn't have an enormous flare now or tomorrow. Okay? So you heard it here. Don't say you weren't warned.
It does depend on how we respond as a collective in that time, and that's what they're trying to say is guidelines, and it all depends on how we respond within ourselves. Isn't it in June that the Moon, Venus and Jupiter, which is supposed to be to do with finance, passes through the dark rift? Which sounds very dramatic, and I don't know much about it. I was thinking, good warm-up class.
We could be here all night on that. I mean, there are so many possibilities and all the rest of it, and which we have, I dare say, talked about. Who knows? But yeah, be ready. And the collective, if the collective is ready, then people can support each other better.
Mm.
I would like to think in some of the smaller communities, I think Forest Row, by the way, I'm looking over here because Winnie and Barry come from Forest Row. I think I would actually do quite well. There's a strong sort of transition town movement. There's a strong sense of people, you know, I think they probably would gather together.
We're great at looting.
Great at looting. So we'll be coming for your food very soon. Mind you, you might need, not so the flares, this could be, who knows, it could be any time, but you've been warned. But on the other hand, World War III might break out before that, if the conspiracy websites are to be believed.
Two more really new real things. I watched the Arctic Ice Sheet News.
Oh, yeah, so that sounds fun.
And we're heading for the lowest Arctic summer ice to date.
When you say lowest, what you mean is coming down low?
The least.
Oh, the least, right.
I've got you, you're
and
right.
The other thing you need to look up is about Fukushima. And I talked to somebody today who really knows about these things. Look up Dr. Caldicott.
Helen Caldicott.
Yes,
I read something about this.
Infant deaths in California in the last few months are 20% up. Mm. And the authorities are not talking just about how bad it is. Just to cheer you up.
Yes, well, just to cheer you up more, you're quite right, because a lot of people are saying there's a huge cover-up over what happened in Japan, and that actually it's released far more radiation than anybody's telling us, and we're all going to die, basically. Now, on the plus side, of course, I'd like to hope we might mutate, because if you look at Chernobyl, there are pigs living in Chernobyl that are highly radioactive, but they're doing really well. They're just highly radioactive. I wouldn't want to have a bacon sandwich out of them, but they seem to be living. I mean, who knows what's going on. But the whole Japan thing. Sorry, Mick, what are you trying to say? Sorry.
If whatever that planet is or star hits us, we won't have to worry about nothing, will we?
Well, that's true. Bless him. Well, I mean, that, of course, is also... Sorry if there's any evangelical fundamentalist Christians in here, because they're hoping that it doesn't matter anyway, because Christ will come at the right moment, and it's got to get bad before it's... This is true, yes.
Maybe planetary euthanasia is just one of those things they contemplate, you know?
Maybe. But yes, aside from the Japan thing, there's lots of people saying America's about to invade Syria. Now, that takes me back a little bit to something I remember hearing in this room years ago. Barry Reynolds, founder of this group, he's not with us tonight, but he did send his apologies. He used to have these communications, not personally, but from a lady that did channeling. And I remember her saying that we go right now back 20 years, it's our 20th year here now. She said, when something like the Syrian forces go over the Golan Heights into Israel, that's the beginning of the end. And now I just thought, that's kind of curious, isn't it? And those people are saying what's going on in Syria is what's really going on. Libya's a kind of distraction. What it's really all about is Syria. And I'm not saying this because there's any truth to it, but I just think we should all talk about these things.
Yeah.
On the other hand, of course, some people say that's a load of rubbish, which might be. But there is certainly a mass of American hardware building up in the Syria kind of region. So they're obviously getting ready for some possibility or outcome.
I bet they've been carrying out quite a lot of drone activity in Yemen, which is totally unreported. And it's been going on for quite a long time, and it's increasing.
I'm sure.
They've definitely got a massive plan for the Middle East. I mean, news. They've definitely got a massive plan for Middle East, which also involves Saudi Arabia.
Well, I mean, yes, it goes on, doesn't it? I mean, it's like the drone attacks in Pakistan. I mean, now they're talking more openly about them, but they've been going on for a long time, before the Bin Laden assassination.
Yeah.
Do we need to say anything about that?
No,
other than how moronic that whole setup?
Yeah,
do we need to really cover that?
I watched Fears for Vendetta, and so, you know, when the little kid goes bollocks at the Big Brother telly, I was just like, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Leave Vendetta.
Send our regards to the makeup artists.
No.
So,
we all know that we're not being told the truth about the world situation. Oh, I did like it today on the news there, where they've announced that the war in Libya, which is obviously a just war.
It's not a war, mate.
Sorry, it's not a war, is it? Forgive me, it's a humanitarian exercise. Forgive me. And it's only cost £250 million. And Sir Jock Stewart, it's a great name, that's it, Sir Jock Stewart. Isn't that a great name? So he says on the news today, well, I think that's very reasonable for action of this kind, or something on those lines. It's like,
small beer.
You think, that's funny, they couldn't afford any hospitals or schools last week, is it? But this is small beer. And he was saying, oh, we'll soon get that back. Isn't it funny how the priorities can just shift as they need them to? So it would be laughable if it wasn't so tragic.
How much did they spend on the sale of arms?
Probably an enormous amount
that's
benefiting them hugely.
By the arms, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, we need a war. And I hate to say it yet again, if you've never read 1984, read it. We're in it, right? It's 1984. It's perfect. Always must have a war against some vague enemy you'll never defeat. Must have a war somewhere. And everything it describes, this is it. We live in that situation. Go and read it.
Brilliant. Well, funny note, we're actually paying for that. Every day when you go to work, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry, isn't that?
Actually, even if you don't go to work, you're still paying for it.
Well,
it comes out of every budget.
We'll sort it out. I mean, I feel like we're reaching, it's almost like something's pushing it so far that we're reaching a breaking strain as a collective where we've got to go.
I think at some point we'll have to take responsibility for what we're paying for.
No.
Well, I think.
And what we're allowing to happen.
All of this that's coming to a head now is about sorting it out, actually.
Yeah.
Although it can look insurmountable.
But I do think that, you know, on a spiritual basis, we personally will have to take responsibility for what we have been paying for. Sorry, Nat, but I'm afraid
that's fair assessment.
We're paying to bomb the finest water in the world, and we're 80% water. That's not doing your karma any good whatsoever.
No.
If you're in the universe test, mankind's finished.
Yeah.
That's how serious it's got.
However, I'm happy to say that's partly why we have these good people sitting in the corner side, because we're going to come to them very shortly. I'm sure, and I hope you're going to cover this, you know, this is all about an overbalance as well into masculine energy. And maybe we're heading for something different, because we're going to talk about divine feminine and all sorts of wonderful things very soon. But coming into something a little bit more feminine, crop circles. I won't go through it tonight. It's been a quiet year. There is no question.
Definitely.
Now, there's two schools of thought. The sceptics, and we'll talk more about this at the next meeting, because I'll be looking at the crop circles this year. The sceptics have been very voracious this year, like really on the attack, really trying to just really nail everyone they hate, with a kind of slight strange quality. It's almost like so fervent. What's the problem? You know, God Almighty, we look at what's going on in the world, is that worth it? Have they got something better to do? But apparently not. And I mean, just to give you an example of that, some of you will have seen Suzanne Taylor's film Crop Circles, What on Earth? Which I have to say I'm in, and I hate it more than any other performance I've ever given. It was filmed, I'm not being funny, it was filmed 10 years ago. Okay, I know everybody hates themselves 10 years ago, but it's particularly bad, and I can't watch it anyway. However, it took her 10 years to make the film, so she's now promoting this as a new film, and she's going all around America especially, saying, watch my film. Bless her. It's, you know, it's raising the word of the circles, but there's an Art Bell type radio show called the Marshall Masters Show, and she was on that on his radio show the other day, and everything was fine. And then when she started talking about the amount of debunking that's going on this year, allegedly, according to the radio station, they then got bombarded with like calls, vulgar calls, and people on the attack. Get this woman off the air, how dare you give her airtime, really horrible things. And then, they claim, somebody then sent their radio station a virus that wiped out all their systems. Now you have to think, no, it could be coincidence, or maybe they just don't like her, I don't know. But it does seem a bit like overkill. You think, what is it they don't want to hear, or they don't want other people to hear, you know? So it's a strange old year, the circles are quiet. And the sceptics certainly, you see, their argument is, oh, well, that's because we're bored, well, we don't want to make any circles now. The counter-argument is, they're going, oh, shit, there's no circles. How do we explain that? Oh, well, we're on a ghost show this year. So you can't win, you see, there's two points of view. Who knows what's right, who knows what's wrong? Those that have long believed that crop circles are a build-up to a time of change, well, of course, if it is 2012 and beyond related, maybe we're in the rundown. Maybe they've done everything they were meant to do. Maybe. It's an interesting thought, isn't it? But then again, it's early days. We might come back, and we're coming back, I think, September, and there'll have been a zillion fantastic formations. But at the moment, it's certainly... The ones we've had are a bit patchy, and there's only been about 10 or 12. It's very, very quiet. So it's a strange old year. But we'll talk about that in September, which will be, by the way, 22nd of September. But if you're on our mailing list, you will know this or find out. If you're not on our mailing list, I can see a few unfamiliar faces, pop your preferably email address, but if not, you can stick an address down, but pop your email address on there and you will find out all our future meetings. So, but we'll talk about crop circles next time. What else can we say? Right, now, we have in the corner here Barry and Winnie, and I will introduce Winnie in a minute. But Barry isn't sort of supportive role tonight, but they are both authors. Barry has certainly written several books, and Barry and Winnie have written a book, and you're going to like this. And given many of the things we've just talked about, you've got to buy this tonight, The Truth About Illness, Unhappiness and Stress. So if this meeting has in any way distressed you or made you feel ill, the remedy is sitting here. Will it fix that?
Absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. But I should also say, Barry's book's been getting some rather nice plaudits. This is Barry's novel, The Breaking of the Shell, which is a kind of a novel with meaning, you know, not just a novel, you know, about everything we're talking about and a man coming to consciousness. I think it's a fair way to say it, although I haven't read it, but Helen has. But she was very absorbed. In fact, bloody, he was in my bed every night, but she was absorbed reading his book.
I'm not looking forward to saying that nicely.
I know, yeah. He's been in the bedroom of every Forest Road person. But anyway, so there are some books here. Do have a look, okay? Because there's lots of interesting things. And Marcus has the new Nexus here, various interesting books and all sorts of things there. Sorry, this sounded like an exchange of Mark now. Well, for those of you that have been waiting, there's probably nobody now, but the new Truth Agenda is out! Finally, updated, revised, new bits, mistakes, change. So, if you want a copy of it, there is now the new version. If anybody watches Sky 200, Edge Media
yes,
TV.
Yes, I do, yes.
Well done. Well, it's back up and running. Ian Crane, there will be not many of you, spoken in here more than once, is now running it with a bunch of guys. We're going to be running a promotional campaign for Truth Agenda in the next few weeks. That'll be fun. If anybody wants to tune in to On the Edge, which is going to be, I think, on next Thursday, the 30th. Me, Jason Porthouse, some of you will remember, used to be here. We're going to be on talking about the Glastonbury Symposium Conference. So, and other things. That's a spin-off, really, into just all the subjects it covers. Which, if you don't know about, there's a flyer coming up end of July. Take a flyer if you're curious about it. I just keep the advert going now. If you're interested in crop circles, however, the new Introduction to Crop Circles is also now finished. There we are, look, two new revised books. Loads of new photographs. But as they're all hoaxes, you don't want to read it. Never mind. And if you read Kindred Spirit, by the way, I have an article on the latest Kindred Spirits of going to Smith's. It's in the one that's in there now, which you might find helpful. It's all about, okay, we're all talking about 2012 and big change and solar flares. What would the reality of that be for the person that cheered when they said all the power's going to go off? How do we deal with that?
I watched Dark Angel, it's great.
So, you might find the Kindred Spirit article worth reading if you're curious about how actually is the spiritual community going to actually approach this and make it a positive experience. So, have a look. Right, I think that's covered everything for now. And if it hasn't, it's too bad. Winnie and Barry have been in this room before, quite a few years back. Now, I think I wasn't here. I'm not quite sure. I think Barry, I was ill or something.
You invited me to do a talk and then legged it.
And I legged it, didn't
I?
So,
I understand that.
So I was starting to hear you. Now, Barry gives talks. But when I said to him, who wants to give a talk? Barry said, look, actually, Winnie's on the money at the moment because Winnie is a regressionist, hypnotherapist, counsellor. And I thought, well, yeah. Actually, so we talked. So, what do you want to talk about? And we decided that we would talk about this business of the goddess, the Grail, and 2012, because I think there is a need at the moment to rebalance the feminine and the masculine in our world in an attempt to help to put right all the kind of things we're talking about. So, Winnie's very kindly come along. It's a really pleasure to have you, and I'm going to leave you now. Happily, you'll be glad to know, in Winnie's hands, and I'd like you to give a big round of applause to Winnie Durden Hollandby. Yes, there's some lights here. You can have whatever combination works for you, which is off or on. No, we can have. No, there is a light switch, actually. No, you can have. Leave that there. There is a switch here which balances it out somewhere.
Ah, there we go.
Actually, to somebody who can actually move to reach that switch. That might seem pathetic, but I can't actually reach that far at the moment. Thank you so much. There we go. Is that okay?
Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me at the back? I'm not used to projecting very far, so if I get quiet, just go, speak up, okay? Thank you very much, Andy, for inviting me. Title of the talk. You're an advanced bunch. I'm a student of this subject. I love to read about it. I'm fascinated by it. What I'm presenting to you tonight, most of you probably know more about it than I do, so perhaps you're here to teach me about it tonight. I don't know. So you've come, so it must be interesting to you as a subject. Is there anyone here who feels they don't really know what the Divine Feminine is?
Tell us anyway. We'd like to know what the Divine Feminine is.
I'd like to know the sort of level of what the audience feels they know about it. I spoke to someone in Forest Road the other day, as I'm doing this talk on the Divine Feminine. She said, what? I had no idea what I was talking about.
I'm still confused.
Okay, well that's good, because really this talk has come out of me because I feel people don't know what it is. I didn't used to know what it was, and that's really what I'm talking about. Is what is it and why is it important? So take a deep breath and close your eyes for a moment. Just bring yourself into the space. Just take some deep breaths and relax. I need to, because I'm nervous. I'm going to read you a quote. I just wanted you to listen to it with your eyes closed. She is the paragon of all paragons of beauty, the reply to all desire, the bliss-bestowing goal of every hero's earthly and unearthly quest. She is mother, sister, mistress, bride. Whatever in the world has lured, whatever has seemed to promise joy has been premonitory of her existence. In the deep of sleep, if not in the cities and forests of the world. For she is the incarnation of the promise of perfection. The soul's assurance that at the conclusion of its exile in a world of organized inadequacies, the bliss that once was known will be known again. The comforting, the nourishing, the good mother, young and beautiful, who was known to us and even tasted in the remotest past. Time sealed her away, yet she is dwelling still, like one who sleeps in timelessness, at the bottom of the timeless seed. That is an anonymous quote. I don't know who said those words, but I find them very moving. Okay, you may open your eyes and have a look at the next slide. I have another quote for you. Does anyone recognise this quote? I don't know who it was. If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its powers to repress dissent. For the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie, and thus by extension the truth is the greatest enemy of the state. Any guesses who said that?
I've heard David Icke say that.
I've heard it before.
Adolf Hitler.
Goebbels.
Okay. Joseph Goebbels. What was his, I don't even know what his role was exactly, but he was obviously very high up in the Nazi party.
Puppet.
He was a puppet.
Excellent satirist at the same time.
He was a great propagandist. So he knew what he was talking about. So what am I talking about tonight? The wider hypothesis of these are two talks condensed into one, by the way, so I'm sorry there's a lot of information, just take in what you can, is that the feminine within us all, okay, gentlemen, this is not about men bashing in any way, this isn't sort of feminism in that way. We are all responsible for what, as somebody has said tonight, we're all responsible for what's happened on this planet, men and women both. But my hypothesis, my argument is that the feminine has been denied at a great cost to the well-being of humanity and our planet. I see this denial at first hand every day in my practice as a counsellor and past life regressionist. I see it in both men and women. I see it in the relationships, particularly between men and women, parents and children, and so on, up from the micro to the macro, as we see the structure of societies and the behaviour of world governments, as you were talking earlier about the state of the world at the moment. So, endless wars, famine, global poverty, all over the place, and the UN estimates, on top of this, that of all the females in the world today, 1 in 3 of them will be either raped or beaten during her lifetime. Does anyone dispute that that's a true statistic? I mean, I don't know, I've heard this. And if it is true, is it acceptable? Mm-hmm. Has it always been this way? Will it always be this way? Would it be a good thing if it's changed? Well, I think probably, feeling the energy of how you were talking earlier, I think probably you all agree that it would be good to change this. So, will it always be this way, or is it that there is a terrible wound to our collective psyche that is the root cause of this behaviour? And is that wound caused by our entrenched denial of the feminine? And is this denigration of the feminine the mother of all conspiracies? Pun intended. I'm not expecting anyone to agree with a word I say tonight or even believe a word I say tonight. I just ask you to consider whether it has truth for you. The best place to connect with this question, I believe, is the heart. So I ask you to listen with your hearts tonight. In case you have any trouble trusting the wisdom of your heart to know whether you're connecting with the truth, here is a true story from the HeartMath. Have you heard of HeartMath in the States? The Institute of Research. You probably all know about this experiment. It was an experiment to determine the response of cells to emotional charge, a sort of emotional reaction. The subjects were wired up to respond to flashed photographs on a computer screen of calming or arousing images, so like a snake striking spider or mother and baby, fluffy bunny, that kind of thing, randomly flashed. The experiment was validated, they were looking for the response in the cells, but what they weren't expecting to find was that there was a premonition response in the body, that people knew what was going to come on the screen before it came. And the part of the body that knew was the heart, not the brain. The heart knew whether to be like this or relaxed at the image. Even the computer didn't know what it was going to flash up. So that's interesting, isn't it? It shows that the heart actually has abilities that can only be called paranormal, transcending the physical laws of space and time. So please connect with your heart tonight, because I believe that is where we can all connect with the goddess, whose wisdom is within us. And if anyone wants any notes of anything I'm talking about tonight, so that you can listen with your heart, not your head, and worry about remembering things, just email me. And I can send you notes. So, for the sake of argument, can we all agree that source or creation or the divine is represented by the circle as oneness, as unity, as all it is? You know, does anybody have a problem with that as argument for what God is? And in our world, this has apparently polarised itself into duality, into masculine and feminine. So the qualities of masculine, the sun, S-U-N, the son, S-O-N, the father, doing, action, dynamism, intellectualizing, progressing, inventing, transmitting. And the feminine is the yin, the mother, the daughter, the moon, being, stillness, heart feeling, emotion, nurturing, holding, receiving. So in terms of creation, we could say that the father is the idea and the mother is the womb of all potentiality, giving birth to matter. Hence the word meta and matter. With me so far? Mm-hmm. Yeah? It's probably kindergarten stuff to you guys, so just having that happy is boring. The vesica piscis is what happens when we divide the circle into two. Take your compass and make another one. Piscis refers to the fish shape in the middle. Also called the mandorla, Italian for almond. It's an almond shape as well as a fish shape, yes? So remember this shape, and we've all seen it in crop circles many times. And if you take your compass and you keep dividing the circle, you get the flower of life, the Genesis flower. If there's an invisible structure to space itself, to matter itself, it is said to be this, by scientists such as Nassim Haramein, who has come across his work. Mm-hmm. So we could say that the underlying basis of creation itself is sacred geometry.
If anyone wants to take sacred geometry further, the template.org is working with some remarkable ceremonies where the flower of life is the simplest one I could work with. Huge honeycombs, totally over my head, but literally over our heads in ceremony. It's beautiful.
I was just reading that now.
Yeah, I recommend it, actually. It's amazing. You won't get profound,
on. Wouldn't she get on so well with Jennifer?
Yeah, you would.
Our ambassador, Jennifer. I think you guys. Anyway.
So has anyone been to this? I expect Marcus can probably tell us more about this. Yes, have you been? Oh, wow. And have you seen the flower of life on these things? Apparently Marcus is doing talks on how this granite would have been worked. I mean, I have no idea. But this temple, the Assyrian, predates the pyramids. Apparently no one can really date it satisfactorily, but it was clearly flooded after it was built. So it was built before these water levels actually rose and flooded it. So it's probably more than 6,000 years. It's,
So where is that, Egypt?
It's in Egypt, yes. It's next door to the Temple of Seti, which is about 4,500 years old. But this is clearly very different and, you know, astonishing work on the stones. I mean, you can see the person sitting on the steps there gives you a sense of the scale. I mean, impossible, really, to imagine how this was put together. But the reason I wanted to look at it is these. There are about 13. Can you see what this is, everyone? This is the flower of life. Do you all know about this? I heard about this through Nassim Haramein. He says that these are impregnated into the atomic structure of the stone, the granite, by technology unknown. Not painted, not carved.
Really?
Yeah.
Bloody
hell. Yeah. Not burned. Something like a laser, he says. You know, we don't know how they got in there. But interesting. Interesting. This is probably familiar to everybody. The Venus of Willendorf, 25,000 years BC. What? How can it be that old? It's a beautifully, superbly crafted artifact. And inconvenient, isn't it, for our historians to explain the existence of such artifacts and such buildings. It doesn't fit in with the picture that we've been told. An archaeologist who needs to produce the sacred stone seriously, especially anything to do with worship of the sacred feminine, or the supposition that there were unimaginably advanced civilizations here so long ago that we don't even know when, they tend to lose their grants, don't they? So what on earth is going on? And clearly this is something to do with fertility. It's not a celebration of the intellect, is it, when you look at the head?
Why do people all look like that within 10 years?
Probably, yes, people even with dollars. The goddess is sometimes termed She of a Thousand Names. Some of these names you'll have heard, and I've heard of them, many that I haven't. I won't read more to you now, you hear all that. Just want to look at Sophia, one of those names. Hagia Sophia is Greek and means holy wisdom. And it's interesting to know that wisdom is personified as the sort of female half of God, Mrs. God, if you will. And here, in the heart of Catholicism, Vatican ceiling, patriarchal God giving life to Adam. But who's this? Tucked away under his arm. Some art historians say Michelangelo had painted Sophia. This is Sophia. This is Holy Wisdom here under his arm. But again, not a well-known fact. You know, how many of us have been taught about Sophia at school? I never did hear of her. Not considered important in the worldview.
She was well known to the Greek philosophers. She would often appear as a sort of in pale blue, as a feminine archetype guiding them. And so they saw her as a goddess of wisdom, and Christ was meant to be married to her. And then images of her now are sort of overlaid with the idea, being incorporated into the idea of Mary the Mother and her pale blue.
Yeah.
The pale blue balancing the sacral. That's why I've picked up.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I was about to say, that was it the Greek philosophers who turned their back on Sophia and put their faith in the Logos, the masculine principle? Did it all start with them?
We were meant to marry it,
Way back before the Greek philosophers, we find on the island of Gozo. Does anyone know about this?
Yes, I've been there.
You've been there, have you? Yes. How fascinating. Again, you know, I hadn't heard about this. Again, people don't talk about this very much. It's not well known, like the pyramids, the pointy pyramids are very well known, but this, it's all rounded. And it's made of also extraordinarily huge stones, over 5 metres in length, weighing over 50 tonnes. Apparently this is predates the pyramids. It's about 6,000 years old. And the legends are that it was built by giants, hence its name, which I'm not sure how you pronounce. But if you dig a little deeper than all the sort of tourist sites, you find that not just giants, a giantess. One giantess called Sansuna built it, according to local legend. Who lived on a diet of broad beans and water and carried the stones on her head with her baby in her other arm, which is fabulous, isn't it? And not, again, not the kind of story we're told. And fascinatingly, within these buildings, we find some of the giantesses. There are some of these figures inside. Did you see them?
No, they didn't have them when I went there, I don't think. It was a long time ago when
again,
I went.
Again, it's hard to find information about these. This is one of the rooms in another temple, which still has its ceiling, which shows a sort of room-like space. There are traces of red paint that indicate perhaps it was all red inside, so it's all very feminine. And then there are these lovely fat ladies. The archaeologists just call them fat ladies, and they've even disputed that they're feminine. They've even said, oh, I'm not sure these are women. Really?
Female wrestlers.
Well, big frilly skirts. I mean, you know. There's a quote from Maria Gimbutas, a maverick academic who stood up for the feminine and went against conventional thought. She said, I prefer to call her the giantess and not label her as huge and fat as the previous archaeologists have done. More effective and sacred than words, the giantess triggers ancient memories within the modern daughter. And Gimbutas also studied symbols such as the spiral. Apparently these Maltese temples have spirals. Did you see spirals everywhere?
Yeah, some places,
no,
yeah.
Photos. This is from Newgrange in Ireland. The spiral has found its way into almost all cultures and has been associated with the feminine as the doorway to life and with cycles of time, seasons, birth, growth, death, rebirth. I just briefly wanted to speak about Newgrange. Has anyone been to Newgrange?
Yeah, I have.
Really? Yeah, wonderful places. Have you seen the solstice?
Not at the right time, wasn't at that time.
In fact, there's years waiting list to get in at the right time.
Yeah, no, it wasn't the right time.
So this is a, you know, again, round, room-like creation. Apparently it has amazing sophisticated astronomical alignments, which I don't know about. Best known for this illumination of the passage and chamber by the winter solstice sun. At dawn from December 19th to 23rd, a narrow beam of light penetrates an opening called the roof box and reaches the floor, gradually extending to the rear of the chamber. As the sun rises higher, the beam widens so that the whole room becomes dramatically illuminated. This lasts for about 17 minutes. And clearly a deeply sacred ceremony of union, to my mind, between the light of Father Sun and the womb of Mother Earth. And according to early Irish mythology, Newgrange was the home of a race of supernatural beings known as the Tuatha De Danann, the people of the goddess Danu. I haven't heard of Danu. Has anybody heard of Danu? Yeah? Well, she's the oldest, she's the most ancient Celtic goddess, apparently. And interestingly, she shows up in the Rig Vedas of India as well, which is interesting, isn't it? Celtic, India. Big geographical space there.
If you try and do a Welsh accent badly, you can end up sounding Indian, so I've often wondered if they did work out.
That's a very good point. Anyway, the Danube is named after her, apparently, because her influence spread very far across Europe. And in many places she's still held in reverence, apparently, although I don't know where. It is told that those who worshipped her, the children of Danu, retreated into the hollow hills of Ireland when Christianity overcame the old ways, and there they became immortal, the fairy folk. And Danu's legend lives on as the power that is in the land, never to be overcome by mortals. So Hathor, I thought I must mention, because of the Hathors. Have you heard of the Hathors? Mm-hmm. Tom Kenyon and Virginia Essien? Okay, I'll start at the beginning. In Egyptian mythology, Hathor is this sort of cow deity, a personification of the Milky Way, which was seen as the milk that flowed from the udders of a heavenly cow. So she often has these lovely cow ears. You can see that. And also her headdress, which is cow horns supporting a sun disc. She also often has a mirror. That's a Hathor mirror there with her face on it, because she's a goddess of love and beauty and motherhood and fertility and music and nurturing.
So she kind of really expresses the essence of the feminine. And the in connection with those mysterious flower of life patterns at Abydos, the Hathors apparently are a race of interdimensional beings, channeled by Tom Kenyon. If you want to just Google Tom Kenyon, you'll find some of their interesting channels. Virginia is seen. Can't go to this tonight, it'll be another lecture on its own, but they claim to have been around helping humanity since the beginning, and they say they work through the Egyptian deity Hathor in these days to assist with the evolution of mankind towards love and peace, which is hopefully where we're going now.
Sound healing. They really like sound healing.
Mm, that's right.
Yeah. They've got the ears, they're really into it.
So Isis, you probably all know about the origins of, you know, what she's doing here, the mother nursing her child. Wife of Osiris, god of the underworld, Isis was called the mother of life and also the crone of death. Her immense powers earned her the titles of the giver of life and the goddess of magic. But I just wanted to compare her here to the Black Madonnas. You all know that some historians do accept and admit that these were possibly renamed Jesus and Mary when Europe was forcibly Christianized. You know, some of the most ancient ones. It's hard to date them. The Orthodox Church certainly doesn't want to talk about dating them or talk about their origins. But they're very cherished, I believe, when they are in their churches. So Kundalini, briefly, could spend the whole evening talking about Kundalini. I hadn't realised until quite recently that she is worshipped as a goddess. I just knew about it as energy. Mm. I knew about Kundalini awakenings and meditations and all that, but she's actually the great mother, Kundalini, who gives birth to all that is.
Actually, the Indians just kind of insist that you relate to your Kundalini as the mother on the grounds that the mother will never abandon you. That might be because in India the poor woman just can't. I've been relating to my Kundalini experimentally differently. Yeah. As a dragon, actually, it's been quite entertaining.
Dragon energy, certainly.
Yeah,
energy.
But yeah, that's how I think the mother thing came in. Indians, she'll never be able to leave. Ha ha, we've got her. Kundalini goes,
So Shakti, another Indian conceptual personification of the divine feminine, sometimes called the divine mother. And Kali, I wanted to speak a little bit about Kali, just because to me I just think Kali is amazing. I used to be so repelled by this image. I could not understand, what do people see in this goddess? You know, ew. But now I learn that it is filled with awe-inspiring symbols. And every symbol that she has a meaning. But very briefly, I was with you all night. She dwells outside the confines of normal society. Her home is the cremation ground. She's unrefined and raw in appearance and habit, sexually powerful and full of energy. Her blackness symbolizes her all-embracing, comprehensive nature, she who is beyond form and quality. Can you see the screen? Am I in the way?
No, you're fine.
Her nudity represents illumined consciousness. Her truth just burns away the clothes of ignorance. Her unbound hair stands for her disdain for convention, her wild and uncontrolled nature, and the veil of illusions which she pierces. Her garland of 50 human heads symbolise the repository of knowledge and wisdom. Her girdle of severed hands, really sad problem, hands apparently signify the action of karma in the world, so the binding effects of karma have been overcome by devotion to karma. So that's why she has hands. The bloodied sword of knowledge cuts the knots of ignorance and destroys false consciousness represented by the severed head. All makes sense. Her red lolling tongue, this is my favourite bit, her red lolling tongue dramatically depicts the fact that she consumes all things and the act of tasting or enjoying what society regards as forbidden, her indiscriminate enjoyment of all the world's flavours. And finally, her three eyes represent sun, moon, and fire, with which she is able to observe the three modes of time, past, present, future. And the name Kali, as you probably know about the Kali Yuga and all that we're in at the moment, Sanskrit word for time. So, Kali's one of my favourite goddesses now.
I've always wondered about that.
I didn't know about time.
When Winnie dresses up like that at home, isn't that scary?
You love it.
Inanna. Inanna, the Queen of Heaven, the most important goddess of the Sumerian pantheon in ancient Mesopotamia. She dates back at least 6,000 years. Excuse me, dry throat. She was also known, or she became absorbed with another goddess or mixed up with Ishtar or Astarte. They ended up all being the same deity. And in Europe, that became Istra, whose name became our spring equinox festival, Easter, hijacked by the Christian church in order to try and stamp out the fertility cults. And her name was given for the female hormone estrogen. Goddess of fertility, love, and war, Inanna was also a kingmaker. This is important for our sort of larger theme. She was a kingmaker. The man she chose for her husband would be king. Along the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, there were many shrines and temples dedicated to her. And the high priestess would choose for her bed a young man who represented the shepherd Dumuzid, consort of Inanna, in a sacred marriage or Hieros Gamos ritual celebrated at the spring equinox. I think the church has been so successful at stamping this out that it is now hard for us to imagine or to understand the ceremony of ritualized sexuality as a concept of divine worship.
Yeah.
And not as something sacred and empowering rather than egotistical or debased.
Mm. Yeah.
It's very difficult.
It is very, yeah.
We just go, sounds a bit sleazy, you know. So, the knot of Inanna, I just wanted to mention briefly, it represented fertility and plenty because it was the storehouse, the knot of reeds at the storehouse doorpost. And it was often carried on a pole, her authority, the mark of her authority carried on a pole. Now, this was probably the original archetype of the bishop's crozier that later was, again, inculcated into Christianity. And also interesting to note that the early church had female bishops before the church fully incarnated into the female repudiating institution that it became. So I thought that was worth mentioning. Now, the blending of Mary, as you were mentioning earlier about Sophia and Mary. This is Artemis and Mary. Artemis was the patron saint of childbirth. There she is in the many-breasted version there. Protector of children and the goddess who especially heard the prayers of women. Ephesus in Turkey was the home of a magnificent temple. This is one of the few places I'm talking about I've been when I was a child. Built around 500 BC, but there were previous temples dating right back to about 3000 BC, apparently, to the goddess Artemis, later termed Diana by the Romans. And one of her titles was Queen of Heaven. Now, the patriarchal Christian church were not able to stamp out this goddess worship, so they substituted Jesus' mother, declaring Mary to be the mother of God in the 5th century. Significantly, they declared this at Ephesus, or they went there and declared it there. And several centuries later, also conferred upon her the title of Queen of Heaven, Artemis' title.
She was known as the protector of virgins, I remember, from school.
Yes.
So it's very much a
sort of virgin, yes. Which is interesting. Now, the fish, as you know, was an early symbol of Christianity when it had to be highly secret. Why this particular shape? Was it just the connection with fish and fishermen, the age of Pisces, the Greek letters Ichthys, which stand for Jesus Christ, Son of God, Saviour? Or was it to do with this, again, back to the vesica? As you can see, you know, that's exactly what it is with its two, the tail is two bits of the circle continued. And when we view the vesica this way around, the mandorla, in the fish-like shape, becomes a different sort of passage, the birth passage. The pointed oval is a universal symbol of the divine feminine, and in this context, the vesica Pisces is the entrance to the womb of the goddess, surrounded by the crescents of the waxing and waning moons. And the Christ image is often within the mandorla. And sometimes as a child, you see him within a mandorla superimposed over Mary's womb. So we could say that the vesica Pisces illumines the common heritage of Christianity and the goddess traditions that it absorbed, traditions that it would later vilify and all but destroy, I could say destroy. the Shimamigig, here we see the mandala in a kind of graphic way, yeah, same shape. These mysterious and controversial figures are seen on Christian churches, majority in Ireland. The bigger one here is in Herefordshire in England. Dr. Barbara Freitag, in her book of the same name, Shimamigig, says Shilas represented some powerful idol or deity that had to be tolerated by the early church because it was too popular among the people to extinguish. Which is interesting, isn't it, when you think. Think about your immediate response to this image. I would think the most typical response in our culture would be a snigger, wouldn't it? How rude. Can you imagine the response of the church to such a female being? Rather than a sacred image, it would be seen as demonic, lewd, crude, dirty, wrong, sinful. I could go on. Disgusting, you know. And they are indeed interpreted as, by the church as warnings about the sins of the flesh. That's their interpretation, the official interpretation. Warning. Sins of the flesh. Can you feel within yourself how these attitudes have been soaked up by us over the centuries? We have great trouble, as we've just said, seeing anything to do with sexuality as sacred. As something connected with spirituality, divinity.
Can I just... do you think that, for instance, to throw up a name, our Queen is under any misapprehensions about where our culture comes from? It's just a question. I mean, I don't want to put you off your track. Maybe you should answer it. I'll answer it afterwards. But it's just something I'd really like somebody to think about. And, yeah.
So Lilith. Everybody heard of Lilith? No good. I haven't really heard about Lilith. She fascinates me. Okay. Lilith is to me a bit of a key to the whole picture. So who is she? Her origins are ancient. She dates back at least as far as 2000 years BC. This is a 2000 year old bas relief of Sumer. Sumeria. Aside from a stray reference comparing her to a screech owl, she does not appear in the Bible at all. It is in rabbinic midrash, okay, the scriptures of the rabbis of the Hebrew tradition, that we hear about her. And we hear how man's first creation, okay, the creation of man, was as an androgynous being. Interestingly. Later divided into two, who must thereafter seek each other out to become whole. Think about that. But the other rabbis tried to take into account the later story of the creation of Eve. How can we fit this in? If woman was created from Adam's rib after his initial creation, then what happened to the female created with him at the beginning? The answer is Lilith. But Adam and Lilith had never found peace together, you see. She refused to comply with Adam's demand that she submit to him. And she fled from him, basing her claim for equality on the fact that each had been created by God from her. And when Lilith saw that Adam would overpower her, she uttered the ineffable name of God and flew up into the air of the world. I like that bit. Adam then complained to God about his loneliness, and the creation of Eve followed, together with the fall and the expulsion from Eden.
Very interesting, isn't it?
Sometimes Lilith, you know, is portrayed as the snake itself.
Yeah.
Lilith typically symbolizes rebellion, rage, and an untamed sexual nature. Lilith is always significantly homeless and wanders about between the domains of heaven and earth. And some stories say, I like this bit too, that eventually Lilith came to dwell in a cave on the shores of the Red Sea, and there she engaged in unbridled promiscuity, I'm afraid to say, consorted with lascivious demons, and gave birth to hundreds of Lilim, or demonic babies, daily.
We call them tombs now.
Okay, and so from Lilith, obviously, we go to Barbie. Here we have Mermaid Barbie, and more about mermaids coming up. This is an extract from Forever Barbie by M.G. Lord. They kind of have to say Barbie in American accent. Barbie offers important insight into our society, she says, and about ourselves. In Western civilization, there is no other icon that is more prevalent or more widely distributed. With the number of Barbies exceeding the billion level, she serves as a defining image of femininity. It is thought that every girl in America will own an average of 7 Barbies during her childhood. Now, this is interesting. Research tells us, apparently, that Barbie was copied precisely from a German adult doll by the name of Lily. As a role model, Barbie, like Lily and Lilith, lived a life absent of marriage, children, and family. She defines a lifestyle celebrating self, eternal youth, perfect beauty and indulgent materialism. Her men are weak and marginalised, while she sets an expectation of female perfection, strength, enduring youth, and eternal beauty. In Barbie's universe, like that of Lilith, women are not the second sex, for Barbie came before Ken.
Well done, Ken.
The idea of woman as temptress or as woman subordinate to man is absent from Barbie cosmology. She has never been exiled from the garden, for she has not experienced the fall. Barbie is both toy and mythic object, a modern woman, an incarnation of the one goddess with 1,000 names. In what psychiatrist Carl Jung has termed the collective unconscious, Barbie is an archetype which is ancient, matriarchal, and profound.
I feel about that.
A brief word about Tantra. According to Tantra, reality is pure consciousness, which is considered to be identical with both being and bliss. In Tantra, this being consciousness bliss is enshrined as Shiva Shakti. So it's like the two of them become one. A conjoined term, think about the androgynous being we were talking about just now, conveying the inseparable nature of Shiva, the absolute, and Shakti, the power of creation. So in Tantra, any conception of the divine which does not include Shakti, the power to become, is considered to be incomplete. And again, I think it's difficult for us Westerners to go beyond the rather limited idea that tantric sex is just sexual athletics, thus failing to go beyond a mere ego-based interpretation of something totally sacred.
You really have to look inside yourself at who you are, don't you?
Absolutely. And this is the symbol of Shiva Shakti, better known to us as Solomon's seal, or the Star of David. Is the symbol of the perfect union of masculine and feminine, the two principles, the sacred embrace of God-Goddess, the symbol of the Hieros Gamos, which I mentioned earlier, which is Greek for holy marriage, and refers to the harmonization of opposites. The two triangles come together to form the six-pointed star, the blade, the upward pointing, and the downward pointing, the chalice. So, in a society which I think you will all agree is based on Blade alone, we have a powerful controlling elite at the top of the pyramid with the rest of the oppressed or even enslaved population, depending on your viewpoint, occupying the bottom. Would you agree that this is what has happened? That if there is truly to be a new age, a golden age of peace and harmony, that it is the goddess who needs to be reawakened in us. The goddess of love who has been so long denied and disparaged. Is this the meaning of 2012 and the great shift in consciousness?
I think there are some scenes up the back somewhere.
Hello, Lee.
Hello. I like this painting. I just stuck it in here because I thought it symbolised something of the balance which has been lost for so long, and which has only just now been rediscovered in our consciousness, or some of our consciousnesses. Some people perhaps have always been aware of these things, but I certainly wasn't. And, oh look, the Vesica Pisces again. This is a Hubble telescope photo. What you're seeing here is unimaginably vast. Are you all familiar with this image?
No.
This is baffling science, apparently. Baffling science, I like things that baffle scientists. In its demonstration of how galaxies are formed. Okay, it's doing the Vesica Pisces thing.
Wow.
As above, so
below. That's excellent. Brilliant.
And it's been nicknamed the Eye of God.
Yeah.
It would be, wouldn't it? I would like to call it the Eye of the Goddess.
Carry on.
Okay, that's the end of part one there, so part two, so anyone wants a loo break?
No, fatal. Don't say
that. Oh,
hold it in.
Hold it in. Hold it in.
Chaos.
We'll continue on this journey of discovery in the second half with an exploration of Mary Magdalene and the Grail Heresy. See if that sheds any more light on the question of whether we can evolve into a higher state of being or not.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.